Good morning all, I'm Dennis Watt. I'm one of the clinicians from Liu Han Chest Hospital. I don't fidget, that's the reason why I'm standing up here. And secondly, I'm quite short. If I stay down there, you will not see me. So I'm working in partnership with Kevin's company, which is Aseptica. So today we're going to talk to you about the feasibility study, looking at supporting patients with COPD, how to self-care. I'm just going to give you a bit of background about ourselves and our study itself. So we're from Liverpool Heart and Chest Hospital. It's the largest cardiothoracic centre in the Northwest. So we look after approximately 2.8 million people from North Wales, Liverpool, Isle of Man, and also Cheshire. So in 2011, we've been working in partnership with NOSDI CCG to provide what we call the community COPD service. So for those of you who are not familiar with COPD, it's a chronic lung condition, mainly caused by cigarette smoking. Patients typically get cough, phlegm, recurrent chest infections. As a result, they get admitted in hospital a lot. And about 900,000 people with COPD is in the country. But all these are magnified mostly because quite deprived. The prevalence of COPD in NOSDI is twice our national average, and the mortality is 2.5 times higher. So just in 2013 and 2014, the CCG spent just over £1.2 million looking after patients with COPD. So why self-supporting patients with COPD then? So traditional treatment for COPD is about giving inhalers, medications, tablets when they're not well, antibiotics and steroids. But actually, self-supporting is very important. One, to give them a bit more ownership of their own treatments. Secondly, give them a bit more self-confidence. And lastly, I think this is the way to move forward. They need to be educated. You'll be very surprised some patients got a long-term condition for many years. When you ask them, so what's wrong with you? They say, sorry, doc, haven't got a clue. What is COPD or what is CODP? Our first prize. So after all that, we come to realize educating them is so important. And that's the reason why we come up with this idea. The more traditional way of educating patients is through what we call the pulmonary rehab. It's a combination of exercise program with education program, teaching patients how to self-manage, how to look after themselves, how to exercise a bit more. Of course, smoking cessation is very important. But in truth, pulmonary rehab has got very high dropout rates. And because patients are always breathless, as a result, they don't attend. And smoking cessation is a huge challenge. And I'm not here to preach to you how to promote smoking cessation. And I don't have any good ideas. And that's the reason why we approached Kevin to see if we've got any more innovative ideas to actually support these patients at home so that they can self-manage a bit better. So what have we achieved to date? So far we've recruited 16 patients with COPD. We've got funding for another 20. The mean age of these group is about 66. Our oldest patient wasn't Eric, he wasn't 92. She was actually 86. It was very challenging because they're elderly. Some of them are not very technically sound. So there's quite a lot of coaching for them to learn how to actually use the technology that we provide to them. As a result, some of them actually need quite a lot of support to actually enable them to monitor their statistics, monitor data, so that hopefully once they get to learn how to monitor data, they know how to seek medical help. And what we're really trying to do is like this. Briefly, COPD patients got several groups. You get a very mild group, you don't really need to do a lot for them, they're quite well. You've got some patient who's got more chronic conditions, but generally stable. By taking the medications religiously, they're fine. But one thing we're worried about are the group right at the end, what we call the gold four group. Those are the ones who've got very severe disease, loads of exacerbations, end up going to hospital quite a lot. These are the ones, the challenging group we want to tackle. At this point, I'll hand over to Kevin, who talked to us about technology a little bit more.
Thank you, Dennis. So when we started the project, we were quite naturally focused on the most high-risk patients, the ones that are in and out of the hospital frequently. But actually, when you take a look at the latest research coming, the greatest reduction in lung function actually happens earlier on in the process. So there's around a 60% reduction in lung function in GOLD stage 1 and 2 with each exacerbation. So what we're trying to do with our system is to catch people early, get using self-monitoring technology quickly, and so before they become too ill and too frail, already be used to self-care. So we've learned to stratify the patients into three different groups. Naturally, we focus on the highest risk group, but for them, the lung function is so low, it's very difficult to improve quality of life. So we're now focusing on the rising risk group, where we can left shift them, where we can intervene in a marginal gains coaching process. Technology is very simple, has to be low cost, from our own activity tracker, which is ISO 13485, through to looking at pulse oximetry and, of course, peak flow and FEV1, a variety of different apps themed around the age of the patient. The data is captured in a series of screens which instructs the user step by step how to do things. And we try and make it fairly simple to capture 42 different pieces of data in about 15 minutes. The data goes to our cloud, and we're now working on connecting that directly to EMIS and also using the MIG messaging system so we can exchange messaging between the hospital and the system. Bit faint on this line, but what Dennis gets to see is a dashboard of all his patients. We triage these based on the National Early Warning Score. And from there, he can dive down and take a look at a particular patient's data. So here we can see a patient who very clearly is exacerbating and gets admitted. We can predict 5 to 7 days out when they're getting sick. But the key thing is to try and educate and pass on that knowledge to the patient and their families so they can intervene quickly. We can then take the National Early Warning Scores and plot them on the map. This was from a few weeks ago. And what we found is that although we're focusing on this red group, we really need to move upstream. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, and that's the investment we need to start to make. What you're looking at this chart is age versus predictive FEV and the capacity left. So for this group of patients who are very frail, we need a very close monitoring, so daily monitoring if that's going to be successful. We really think our system is perhaps best focused at patients who are in the rising risk group, who can learn to change behaviours and can learn their medication and what to do. And then there's an arm's length population where we're looking at purely apps. So you can download our apps for free and start to use it without making a single purchase. Dennis, swap over to you.
The challenges that we've encountered are actually very similar to what Avery said already. Information governance, ethical approval. Nothing works fast in NHS, unfortunately. And strangely is that in our hospital, everything takes a cycle every 4 weeks. Once they reject it once, we have to go back to them again. And then 4 weeks later, and again. One example is we got the funding in about September last year. This project didn't go live until February because there have been quite a few knockbacks. But I guess one thing we learned from that is, once again, from our mistakes, never give up, learn from the mistake and move on. So as fortunate enough, we've secured the ethical approval, information governance transfer, so that we can provide patients with educational support. But Kevin from his company can actually oversee the project and also at the same time provide technical support for our patients. The only one thing about our experience is that, once again, I think we talk about NHS without any money. We don't have a lot. To secure time to remotely monitor these patients is quite difficult. On the background, it's a very, very busy job. But fortunately, we've been able to secure 2 days for one of our physio to oversee the project. As mentioned before, we managed to get approval from ethics, information governance. But one thing we didn't take into consideration at the beginning is we need consent form, simple things like that. Even consent form that go through the expert patient group, they knock us back a few times saying the wording is too complicated. If they can't understand our consent form, how are they going to understand technology? That may be something, in retrospect, we should have thought a little bit more about. But so far, the feedback from patients is very good. As you can see here, 90% of our patients are actually very compliant with technology. Just as what Kevin said before, it's simple. Our patient group is very challenging. They're elderly. But yet again, they manage to use technology very diligently. 90% of patients are actually satisfied with technology itself. 80% are competent using technology after being shown just for about 4 weeks. So at the moment in time, as I mentioned before, we still got our physio who's got 2 days dedicated time to remotely support these patients. So if any problem, use the technology or any technical problem, they either come to ourselves or go to Kevin directly. Okay. And lastly, 60% of the patients are happy to contribute. When you ask them financially, would they buy this kind of technology? They'll say yes. So moving forward, we try to scale up this project. And hopefully, at some point, the 20 patients or the funding for 20 patients can be used. Thank you very much.